All right, we're back in studio once again, and let's kick this off with a jam, a sweet jam, or maybe a jam that I remember being a sweet jam. See if you can name that tune. You'll recognize that as the Baywatch theme. Of course you will. Probably the best part of the show, to be honest. It's just everybody looking sultry in slow motion and then running in slow-mo on the beach. You know who was my favorite guy in Baywatch? You know who was my favorite dude in Baywatch? There was an older guy who was like balding big time and mustachioed, and this was at a time when the mustache was at like an all-time low of popularity, right? It was the least popular thing. He also had a lot of chest hair and stuff where everybody else was clean-shaven. That was my favorite dude. He seemed like he was the dad of everyone on the beach working, you know? He's like, yeah. Oh, there he is, Michael Newman. And they're forcing him to run into the surf doing that goofy bow-legged run they do. It seems like, you know, someone had to make that theme song, and then it was sort of like, well, okay, the show's about lifeguards, and he's like, okay, what else can you tell me? That's it. You know, just whatever. It's like, okay, well, some people do this, some people do that. Well, I'm running low. Let's see. Can we see who did this song? I want to know who did that song and what else they may have gotten up to, right? That seems fair. Oh, God, Baywatch has a long... Everything from earthquakes and shark attacks to serial killers and even nuclear bombs served as plot conflicts in the show. Thus, a trademark of the show was slow-motion shots of the lifeguards running, most notably done by Erica Aleniak, Pamela Anderson, Yasmin Bleeth, Alexandra Paul, and David Charvet, along with Hasselhoff during the height of the show. Each show would feature one or two such montages, often superficially related to the plot. Yeah, no doy. Let's see. I'm going to just keep going. Wow, they had a lot of cast members. Good God. Keep going. Theme songs. The original theme song was Save Me, performed by Peter Cetera with Bonnie Raitt on guitar. Whoa. Above the Waterline. I'm Always Here. Is that the one? Oh, performed by Jimmy Jameson of Survivor. That sounds pretty good. That sounds about right. Is that what we just listened to? I don't even know what we just listened to. But that's pretty amazing. The guy from Survivor sang that song. Who would have thought? Rising up back on the street. I want to know what this Save Me was by Peter Cetera. That's what I want to know. You know, why would they replace it? Was it better? While discussing the Baywatch themes, what was the best one? These are conflicts. These are questions of our lives. It looks awfully similar, the video. Activate YouTube. Have to tell it to do it and then tell it to do it. Wearing a sweatshirt inside in the summer, this is a mistake. One of the many things in my life that is a mistake is wearing this sweatshirt. I'm going to try and take the sweatshirt off. It'd be great if the song just started.
Yeah.
Ugh, this is terrible. Look at that farty synthesizer. Yeah, no, this is no good. I mean, actually, the preview is better because they're like, well, there's more butts. There's more running away from a burning guard tower. Yeah, this is terrible. You know, if there's ever been something that's not a huge disaster, it's probably a lifeguard tower burning down. It's like, where are we going to get the water to fix this? Like, I don't know. Probably anywhere. Anywhere nearby. Most of what's nearby is definitely water. So I think we should be able to put this out fine. Welcome to our show. We have a lot to celebrate in America today. I don't know if you've heard, but gay marriage is now legal. This is when a man and a man get married to each other. This is a very big deal because this was only illegal in a bunch of states, and now it's legal everywhere, which is cool. And now, you know, it'll be up to the court to decide what to do about a guy who owns a pizza place and doesn't want to cater a gay wedding. And when, I guess, a gay person forces them to want to cater a gay wedding. We dole out advice on this show. And I'm just going to give some advice to people. If you're marrying a dude and you're a dude, and you go to someone to cater it, and they say, oh no, we don't cater gay weddings, I think my advice would be not to try and force them to do that, but to move on. And not only that, I would just be glad that they just said it, because then that gave me the option to move on and go somewhere else and not give them money. For all I know, they're going to, you know, they may just not like gay people, and then they'll just use whatever. And here's my advice if you own a business and you hate gay people, by the way. Rather than get yourself embroiled in a court case, just don't say anything, and then donate 10% of it to an anti... Is there such thing as an anti-gay charity? Is that even an option? Can I... If, like, let's say I had some kind of... I don't know, anti... What would an anti-gay charity be? I guess I'm not sure what a pro-gay charity does exactly, so that doesn't really eliminate that question either. You know, I got real good at bantering just between waiting for this laptop to go. I'm not real good at it, but it's something I've become accustomed to doing. I wouldn't say that I'm successful, but it's just something that happens on this show frequently that I'm sure you're all quite used to at this time. Oh, God, my Google search history. That's going to be the death of me. I was talking to my mom about, she wanted me to do something, and I said, no way, because whatever. And she was like, I was saying, oh, I don't want to do this because that's going to ruin my potential political career. She was like, oh, I think all your helpful snowman stuff did that already. And I was like, oh, no, that's my platform. You're confusing the message with the mistakes. I'm all message and mistakes. I'm made of nothing else. This computer is just sitting. It's just taking a chill. Chill Bill. And I've got 1,000 icons lined up at the bottom that I don't want. And I had a bunch of stuff to do on the computer. This is going to be a problem. Just kind of sitting here waiting. Oh boy. Oh boy, computer. Well, that's all the show we have for today. And no outro music, I guess, huh? I like when this tells you things like your computer's potentially unprotected from viruses. And it's like, yeah, no shit. No fucking shit. What do? You got like some kind of safe scheme that you've come up with? Are you kidding me? Oh, new updates are available. That's always a nice thing to hear. You're like, oh, really? And I can just have them? As long as I'm willing to sit for 45 minutes and just wait? Maybe this is what I get for Googling anti-gay charity. Maybe this is what happens when you type the words anti-gay charity into a computer. And the computer is like, well, I can't get married. God damn it. Damn my life. Damn it to hell. I had like five things we were going to talk about. Well, we can just kind of do this. Maybe I'll just do the old Control-Alt-Delete. And we'll just preview a little bit. I had a Goodreads fight with somebody this week. I don't know if you're all aware of Goodreads, the site where you can leave book reviews. And some lady really got into it with me. This isn't the first time this has happened to me, nor will it probably be the last. But basically, I got accused of being, you know, Hitler, which is offensive because, you know, to me, it's like, hey, lady, you're not the first person to accuse me of being Hitler, nor are you the last. Okay, let's just calm down. Just going to end this task. Let's just end it. End it all. I had some pretty interesting Independence Day facts to tell you about. Independence Day being the movie, of course, not the event. Because we have 4th of July coming up, have you heard? 4th of July is a great holiday because you get to do a lot of great stuff. You get to sit outside on the hottest time of year. That's a big plus. You get to not wear shorts and have people ask you why you don't wear shorts and then explain to them that you don't think it's appropriate for grown men to wear shorts. Because I don't. I've Googled many times swimming pants. And like many of my other interests, unfortunately, you know, like a full-size swimming suit, I think is something that jerk people would want as like an affect. And I just want it because I don't like the sun and I don't like pants. Homophobic charity. Here we go. 7 companies that don't support gay rights. Anti-gay groups rally to defend anti-gay charity group. Let's see. Ooh, this is right-wing watch. Rightwingwatch.org. Could they have possibly made their name harder to say? Let's see. Charity Give Back Group, formerly the Christian Values Network. Oh, great. We have some crazy-ass pop-up that I cannot close. Beautiful. Okay. Charity Give Back Group. Let's see. Focus on the Family. Oh, that's kind of anti-gay, right? Anti-gay thing. Focus on the Family is now encouraging its members to write to the companies that have ended their ties with CGBG, probably known as the group that's most often mistaken for like a blues and bluegrass bar in New York, or possibly Los Angeles. Who the hell knows? FRC was part of a campaign that threatened to boycott Comedy Central. Who's FRC? Focus on the Family and the FRC. Family Research Council. That sounds good. That sounds like what I need. Family research. I'm just wondering now, because like I know there are companies that are not pro. Well, I know there are companies that are like not pro-gay or that are anti-gay, but I want to know what a charity is that's like a anti-gay charity. You know, where you're like, oh yeah, we're doing a lot of good charity work against gayness. I'm just curious. Family Research Council since 1983. That's when I was born. Also, they're for marriage. That looks pretty good. Oh, let's see. Newsroom, FRC blog, Tony Perkins Live, Take Action, Religious Practice, ooh, Abortion, A Wound in America's Conscience. That's by a dude, by the way. Just in case you were curious about that. The Real Planned Parenthood, the Leading the Culture of Death 2015 edition. Wow, these are really good. Gay Pride, Augustine and Us. We must stop the media from silencing your voice on marriage. Four reasons for the Supreme Court's marriage decision. Let's see. That sounds like a good place to go. By Travis Weber. The court has taken to viewing itself as a social problem solver. This decision and others like it are enabled primarily by an understanding which fails to take a limited view of the court's power. This ruling also devalues a strict separation of powers and disregards any serious consideration of federalism. Okay, that's boring. That's really boring. The court has completely accepted and assumed the validity of substantive due process. Not even going to read that. Three, the court exercised naked political will to overlook gaping differences between this case and its prior marriage cases. I just wanted to say they overlooked gaping. They aren't really interested in gaping, and the members of the court largely have discarded any notion of higher authority as informing human affairs. Uh-oh, this is where we get into God. That's what I'm talking about. Do they have comments on these? I would really like it if they had comments on these, because I want to see... I want to know, like, do people comment on the crazy others? It doesn't look like they do. That's sad. That is sad. Legalization of same-sex marriages isn't an excuse to attack churches. Well, that's interesting. Okay. Well, there you go. I just had one quick thing I wanted to say about gay marriage. Gay marriage. Now they can be, you know. Oh, hang on. Almost ready. I'm just waiting for a thing to load. That's very important. This is a problem. It happened. My victory music loaded. Okay, now we're ready. Gay marriage. Now, gay people can be miserable like the rest of us. I'm raising my hands in victory. This is a pretty sweet America theme. I'm looking at a picture of the Statue of Liberty right now. Kind of a mediocre one. But when you come across, you know what? When you brew up a good joke like that, you can't just let it pass uncelebrated. And unfortunately, I don't have any co-hosts or anything, so I don't really know what the reaction was, but I can assume about my great joke. Do you want me to tell it again? Gay marriage. Now those boys who like to touch each other's peeps can be just as miserable as the rest of us. Gay marriage. Now those 50 to 60 year old ladies with short gray hair who all seem to live in Santa Fe can be miserable like the rest of us. Gay marriage. Now, gay people can live sexless, boring lives with idiot children like the rest of us. Actually, I don't know how that applies to kids, but still. Gay marriage. Now, same-sex couples can make honest children out of the expensive dogs they've adopted. They're just like us. Now they're just like us, wallowing in the misery that is our lives. Wallowing in the terrible terribility that is straight life. Goodbye to the parties. Goodbye to the weird drugs that come in a balloon that I don't understand. Goodbye to the weird terminology for different types of gay men. Otters, bears, Super Marios, banana men, tarantulas. Goodbye to them. Tarantulas, I'll miss you most of all. We have another news story that came across my desk here. Interesting news story about a little brand called Lean Cuisine. Lean Cuisine is making a move away from diet marketing. Now, I know what you're thinking. It's called Lean Cuisine. Well, they've decided to move away from off of weight loss marketing and instead talk about, you know, how great their food is. They've got some pretty good offerings coming up. Sweet and spicy Korean style beef, which is another type of gay man that we will just say goodbye to. Vermont white cheddar, again. We could keep going that way. Lean Cuisine brand manager Chris Flora called the new approach a massive pivot from the 34-year-old brand. Now, here's what my favorite part was. They have a new campaign that's called Feed Your Phenomenal. That's what they're calling their new campaign. Lean Cuisine, Feed Your Phenomenal. Hopefully we can watch this video. Right now, it's just a blank white square. So if this is their video, they're not doing well. Oh, here we go. I'm looking at a real shitty pair of shoes. Hopefully this will let me pause.
I'm working when you're sleeping.
Lady on a motorcycle.
A lot of moms come in nervous. They look at me, they say,
she's at the hospital.
I can't believe I did this. I say, I told you you could do it.
She's holding the baby.
It's just a normal thing that happens at 3:23 a.m. And you finally get a minute to yourself to just breathe.
She's taking a break. She opens the freezer. Vermont white cheddar mac and cheese.
And Lean Cuisine's really changing it up so I can eat the way I want to eat.
Feed Your Phenomenal with the new Lean Cuisine.
Oh, there's our sweet and spicy Korean style beef. So there you go. If you eat Lean Cuisine, you can be part of the magic of childbirth, I guess, is what I'm learning. I can eat the way I want to eat. That's great. That's really great. Lean Cuisine sales have dropped 20% in the past 2 years to about $800 million. That's pathetic. Fresh is winning versus frozen, mainly because consumers view fresh as being less artificial and therefore better for you, said Rick Shea, a former packaged food marketing executive and president of Shea Marketing. This is what, again, this is a part of a segment I like to call of marketing is horrible, evil assholes who I wish would all die. It's like, oh yeah, well, here's the thing. People view fresh food as being fresher and therefore better for you. And our goal here is to prove that frozen weird food is better because it has a name of a place like Vermont or Korea. There you go. That's what's happening. So, hey, Feed Your Phenomenal. God, has anything ever sound to you more like an ad campaign? Lean Cuisine, Feed Your Phenomenal. Fuck off. Go fuck yourself. I wish it showed, you know, if it's my phenomenal, it's like me, I stagger in, and it's like, dun, 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 dun. This piano music, this soft piano music playing in the background, right? Let's see if I can find any stuff. If the internet will let me do it. Here's soft piano music. Long playlist. Study music. That's 2 fucking hours of piano right there. So here's the situation. I come home. I stumble in the front door. And as I stumble in said front door, you know, I fall on my face in the kitchen, and then time lapses, and I'm laying there on the floor for an hour. It goes back, shoots back to regular style time after a second, just to show me crying as I'm laying on the floor. And, you know, then it goes back to fast motion and you see the puddle of tears like expand away from my face very quickly. And then, you know, this is perfect. And then I'm, you know, I get up on my feet and then stumble into the freezer and almost knock it over. Open it up and look inside. And there's a frozen pizza in there, and I get that out and make it and eat it. And then I go sit on the couch and savagely masturbate myself and go back to the freezer again. And now I'm down to pizza rolls, which I make in the microwave. You know, I turn on the oven and look at it for 2 seconds and then put them in the microwave and just microwave them until one of them blows up all over inside. And then I eat those. And then while I still have the grease, again, savagely masturbate myself. And there I am on the couch, a bloody cummy mess. And then I'm, you know, look in the freezer one more time and I see, oh, Lean Cuisine, eh? Vermont cheddar. Put that in the microwave. Go vomit, forget about it entirely, pass out in the bed. Next morning, wake up, and it's just a, like, rice cake made out of macaroni and cheese. And, but I just need something to power my stupid, shitty body through one horrible day of work. So I just take it with me in the car, wrapped in a napkin. And, not even a napkin, I don't have that. I just have a coffee filter that I wrap around it, because I'm like, this is pretty much a paper towel. And I'm eating it in the car, squinting into the sun. Feed your phenomenal. So that's a suggestion, you know, if you guys want to use that over at the cuisine, that's what I call it, is just, I just call it cuisine. Feel free to use that concept, that general idea. So let's talk about a little book review incident. A few whiles ago, I could tell you exactly how long ago in a second here. It just takes me a while to get to things. More of my books. If you're not my friend on Goodreads, you know, be my friend on there. And you should use that if you read books or comic books or anything like that. I highly recommend it. So here's the deal. A little while ago, I read the book Dad is Fat by Jim Gaffigan. Because I think Jim Gaffigan's a funny fella. And he's fat, so it's factually accurate, so that's something. And what else do you need to know, right? So I said, fuck it. I'll read this book about this fat idiot. That's horrible. But there we are. Here's the deal. I gave it a 3-star review. And I will just read this for you, because I think it was pretty fair. And here's the other thing you need to know. Sometimes I review a book and I end up not talking about the book a lot because fuck you. Like, does anyone really need to know what my exact thoughts are on this? Maybe, maybe not. Sometimes I just talk about what's going on in my life. I use Goodreads as a secondary blog, basically. So here we go. Where to come down on this book? Jim Gaffigan is a really funny stand-up and he doesn't sound like anybody else. Okay, he talks about food all the time, but who cares? His new special, Mr. Universe, is on Netflix, and I can't recommend it enough. The book is readable for the childless, like myself, and there are still some laughs. Unlike a lot of parenting-type books, Gaffigan doesn't present his kids as unassailable. He makes fun of them in a kind way, but still. And though he questions himself, doing at least a decent job, I think if you take your kids to the park, you can probably make fun of them in a book for being dumb when they are first born. The book is mostly centered around the decision to have 5 kids and raise them in Manhattan, and the only piece that comes off kind of defensive is the one where Gaffigan expresses that he's tired of people asking if he and his wife are done having kids, as this is a private matter. a fact with which I take umbrage. To really solidify some feelings, I thought I would present the opposite perspective. A non-famous guy who lives in pretty much the opposite of Manhattan, unmarried, no kids, and skin that can tan. So here are some of the things brought up in the book and just what I think of them in general. Home births. Weird. But whatever, it's your house. Just don't tell me I'm sitting in the exact spot where the placenta, quote, splashed down, because I really don't know how to react to that information. I don't tell people how often I urinate in the sink. And also, please don't explain to me how this is less distressful for the baby. This is like you explaining to me what makes a caterpillar happy. You can't possibly know, nor are we even certain that a caterpillar is capable of being happy. Raising kids in the city. I come off like a big fat harumph here, but I'm a little opposed to this idea in general. Because where do the rest of us get to go and have grown-up fun? I like that some things are for grown-ups. There was a time when families moved to the suburbs, and look what you made there. It sucks. You should all have to fix the suburbs before you're allowed back. Family bed. A friend introduced me to this concept years ago. Basically, everyone is welcome to sleep in the same bed. Kids and parents. Dog-piled. Maybe with a dog if that's a family member, I guess. I'm less opposed to the idea of everyone sleeping in the same bed because of some kind of family value situation and more opposed to it because of the value of sleep. I've woken up in a pile of small strangers before and this is not an experience I care to replicate. Let me tell you about how amazing my spouse is. Well, why? Are you trying to set me up with your wife? Am I supposed to agree with you and then take on a campaign of wooing your wife away from you now that I've seen the light? I just don't get it. A lot of people spend a lot of time online letting the rest of us know just how much they appreciate their spouses, but not in super specific ways, just with words like wonderful. How about you just tell your spouse about it, or buy a thesaurus, and amazing will be in the A's as opposed to the U's, by the way. Having 5 children. Yeah, I have to say I'm opposed to this. I know it's sort of a personal choice, but it's sort of not. Let's put it this way. As selfish as it is for me to want to be the first in line at the donut shop every time I go, it is equally selfish for parents to create a large number of humans who will be in front of me at the donut shop. I'm not saying that I'm right to want to be first. I think we can all agree that this is selfish. I'm just trying to make the point that having a large number of kids and saying that this has no effect on the larger world is just patently false. Gaffigan made a point about how each of his children has made him happier, but I think that there is no way to really know if you would have been equally happy with fewer children and it's the same amount of time passed. Maybe it's baby number 5, but maybe it's 3 babies combined with career milestones and a strong marriage. I also think that Gaffigan is a rare person who makes enough money to adequately provide for such a large family and also seems committed to spending a lot of time with them. So maybe it's the right number for him. But I think that people should take a more carefully examined look at the right number for them, because for many a person, 5 is too many. 1 is too many. Citing overpopulation and all that is somewhat crazy, so I won't go there. But I think we can all agree that the world is not underpopulated. Humans, so much about us is biologically designed to pass on our genes through children, to create as many children as possible, to have sex and create life. This is some very old mojo and accounts for so much human behavior. The way people try to impress each other, the way people act at bars, the acoustic guitar, baby fever. That said, I think that what makes a person is the ability to recognize those mandates set by outdated biology and to deny them. For the most part, we do make strides to get away from these sorts of things. This is why we have things like equal rights. I can't not hire a guy missing a leg because he's missing a leg, even though there's a reptilian part of my brain telling me that this person is an imperfect biological specimen. Diet, exercise, medication, who do a lot of stuff to deny those things that are lodged in our brains or to hold them off until evolution catches up. But babies. Babies are the one thing that we still categorize as magical, and if you were to criticize someone having a baby, you would look like a complete shit. It sounds like a conspiracy nut typing, but procreation is so caught up in the whirlwind mixture of biology, economy, and religion that it's inexorable. There will never be a day in human history where we can look at ourselves and ask, is it necessary to have children and why? I know, you're thinking I'm a lonely, depressed loser by now, which I totally am. But nonetheless, I think that if you can't honestly ask the question about the larger impact of humanity, what the universe would be short of if humanity were to decrease into non-existence, then I have to think that you're a person driven by biology, religion, or economy in a way that's harmful. You have to be able to ask the question, at the very least. I really and truly believe that what makes us human is the ability to recognize and deny those forces now and then. Okay, not always. Sometimes I would really like to drive a rad car. And nobody wants to hang out with a complete nihilist. Believe me, if I'm three beers in, the last thing I want to talk about is how religion has shaped Western economy. But if I'm three beers in, I might be just about ready to talk to you about what the hell the point of five kids could possibly be. So there we go. That's the review. Quite a few people have liked it, as people do on Goodreads. And yeah, I think I feel mostly the same. I mean, I guess I read that and felt like it was pretty fair. The one thing I would probably clarify if I was redoing this again would be to say, like, when I say Jim Gaffigan is the combination is, let me see here, having five children. Gaffigan is a rare person who makes enough money to adequately provide for such a large family and also seems committed to spending a lot of time with them. Now, I think what I should have said, in all fairness, is probably, I'm not saying that it's just because he has enough money to provide. What I'm saying is, I'll just be a little judgmental of parents and say, well, you have to provide enough. You have to have enough money and resources to provide for your child if you want them to be raised properly. And you have to want to and actually spend time with them. It has to be both. Ideally both, right? And if you can't do both, probably you don't need five kids. So here's, let's just go down here and look at where things got a little crazy. So someone named Tammy was the first one to sort of comment on it months and months later and said, what is your purpose in life? Why were you born? Thank goodness your mom and dad didn't feel this way about you. Thank them for bringing you life on Earth, which is capitalized, by the way. Which is certainly that is like the worst question ever, is the religious question, like, well, good thing your parents didn't decide to have an abortion, because that is an asinine premise, because I wouldn't be here to lament them having an abortion if they had an abortion. Like, I don't believe that I would be sitting in some kind of limbo being like, ah, shucks, well, I guess I'm stuck as a baby forever because I never made it to Earth because my mom jammed a yardstick in her and scrambled my brains. I just don't believe that way. But, you know, I gave this review that I think is obviously expressing an opinion, but is pretty darn even-handed. And also, I thought the tone of it was fairly light, right? It gets into a little bit of a heavy question at the end, but whatever. By the way, of all the things I said in there, I think my view has changed the most on family bed. That's crazy. Here's what's gross about family bed. Everyone's sleeping in the same bed. Well, what age is the cutoff then? At what age do you say, okay, it's time to sleep in your own bed? Because how long would a kid sleep in your bed otherwise? Till they were 8? And then I guarantee you, if your kid sleeps in your bed until they're 8, when they're 20, they're going to be like, Mom, what the fuck? That's gross. You make me sleep in a bed. Jesus Christ. Anyway, I what's my purpose in life was what she asked, and why were you born? Which is an interesting question, because I'm like, I don't know if I can really answer that. I think it was just a lot of chance. just a lot of, I think people don't want to believe that they were born by a lot of coincidence, right? Like, this sperm hit this egg at this time, and that made me. Like, that just seems like too much. You know, my parents met of all the billions of people and banged, and maybe even doggy style banged, and then I became a person because of that doggy style bang. Like, that's too much chance and too much thinking about what your mom looks like from behind bent over. No one wants to think about that. But also, it's fucking true. What are you going to do? I don't know. The chances of witnessing a car crash are not super high, but a lot of people do. And then they do, and then it's not like, oh, I must have witnessed that for a good reason. Um, Yeah, I just, you know, my mom had me. I swear to God, I asked her, I wrote this in here, but I was like, why did you have kids? Not because I thought she was a bad mom, but because I was a little like, why would you have kids with my dad? He seems like a bad choice. But basically, they were living in Texas. They moved from Chicago to Texas. So he was, because he was an anesthesiologist doing his like internship residency thing. And that's where they went. And she was like, well, I wanted to have kids. And I figured, well, I got nothing to do now, so I might as well have kids. So pure boredom is a pretty short way of saying that. So if that's what you want to say, you know, oh, thank God. Let's see. Someone named Danielle said, like, you know, I generally agree, but I think people like Jim Gaffigan should be encouraged to procreate as much as they want. There are other people who we don't want having even one child. I also think it's irritating when non-parents have opinions on things like the family bed. In most cases, this is done because it leads to more sleep for everyone. But otherwise, I enjoyed reading your review, even though I don't entirely agree with it. And then she goes on to agree with the parts she agree with. Which, you know, again, I was like, well, you're kind of, you're posing having kids and multiple kids as two options. Everyone has to pick, well, do I have one kid or five? And also, this is something I've heard from other people, too, who think they're very smart. People who think they're very smart think it's very important that they have a bunch of kids, because how they see it, they'll say, have you seen Idiocracy? You seen this movie? The dumb people are going to outshine and overpopulate, and the smart people are not. Therefore, smart people should overpopulate, and that way we'll even it out. To which I say, you are exposing yourself to me as one of the dumbs, because that is a very dumb idea. You don't outsmart them by having more of you, okay? Also, you just have your kid, your one kid, and it's like, all right, so he has one kid, and maybe there are like five dumb kids for every one of him, so what? Then he just becomes a fucking leader of industry or whatever, or, you know, he has a good life, because basically he doesn't have to work as hard as all the dumb kids, and he can enjoy himself. And yeah, it's fucking annoying, because you go to the airport, and it's like, some asshole is out there like, what do you mean I can't bring this whole bottle of shampoo on the plane? I like to wash my hair on the plane if I have to. And the guy's bald. Also, it's like, I don't like when people who don't have kids have opinions on things about having kids. Well, fuck you. Okay? Well, I don't like when women have opinions on men. How about that? You don't know what it's like. I got this whole penis here. How are you supposed to know how that works, huh? Yeah, no way. But ultimately agree, whatever. Let's skip down here, because this is when things got crazy. LV Richardson, my newest friend. FYI, the donut shop will go out of business. This is when I talked about how I don't like them waiting in front of me at the donut shop. FYI, the donut shop will go out of business if there are not enough people standing in line to buy them. So then, you will not have any donuts at all. So, if you are a donut lover, be grateful... Sorry, there's misspellings and weird commas. Be grateful for those willing to populate the earth with other donut eaters, okay? To which, really, my feeling was, go fuck yourself. Like, I'm not gonna... Oh, thank you so much for having a baby. And also, her, like, economics lesson is really horrible. You know, because her premise, based on that entire review where I'm like, is it necessary to have five kids? By the way, I heard an interview with Jim Gaffigan on Mark Maron's show, Pal. And he talked quite defensively about having as many kids as he does and how people give him shit for it. And Mark Maron was like, really, do people really give you a hard time? And he's like, oh, all the time. They're like, oh, you got a lot of kids. But at the same time, here's the thing. If he just had five kids and he didn't talk about it, I'd say, whatever, no big deal. But like, his stand-up special opens with talking about having a kid, and he has a joke of like, well, it's like you're drowning and then someone throws a kid at you. And it's like, okay. And then this whole book was about that. It's called Dad is Fat. It's about raising his kids and how that goes. And it was funny. But do I think that opens you up to some questions? Yes. Do I think that it's not like I sought out a Jim Gaffigan book that had nothing to do, you know, I just was like, oh, I found out that fucking J.D. Salinger had 9 kids, so I just commented on Catcher in the Rye and said, like, oh, I like the part where he talked about the ducks, like the part where he called everyone a phony, don't like that he had 9 kids, and here's why it's wrong. This is talking about exactly what happened in the book. So anyway, I just basically told this person, like, well, I had a lot to say, but I'll tell you what, when the average public school class size is manageable, reasonable 20 students, I'll start thanking people with kids at the donut shop. Hell, I'll buy their donuts myself. Because I had a big long thing where basically I was like, you're an idiot. And I'm not really talking about the donut shop. That's not exactly... That was just an example of the point. And again, I said I was being selfish and a dick. So let's see. Here we go. Okay, this is LV Richardson. Okay, I'll make the point again. Those same kids at the donut shop are also the ones in school, class size large or small, and the ones who grow up to become teachers and donut shop owners and or eaters, and donut shop eaters, and owners of property who pay property taxes so public schools can exist and teachers get paid to teach each other people's kids. In other words, every individual has the same rights to their personal choices as any other, and the cycle of everyday life goes on. We're all in it together, are we not? Which, again, I was just like, that's a really dumb point, because if you're talking about sustaining what exists, or even slightly reducing, 2 people can have 1 kid, or 2 people can have 2 kids. You can have 5, right? Friend Mike is just like, what the hell is this? This is crazy. I can't even believe this is real. And then I said, well, it's a strange argument. I'm not going to attack anyone here, because at this point I wanted to. I looked at her profile. Well, I'll tell you all about LV Richardson's profile. But here's what I decided to do. I throw, you know, and I even said, I'm not making a value judgment, just a statement of what's common and what isn't. And economics aren't that interesting to me, but here we go. And then I made a list of the happiest countries according to the World Happiness Report, which are Switzerland, Iceland, Denmark, Norway, and Canada. And economically, they rank 20th, 111th, 34th, 25th, and 11th. And in populations, they rank 98, 182, 215, 244, and 37. Now, the 3 wealthiest countries are the United States, China, and Japan, and on the happiness scale, they are 15, 84, and 46. And the most populated countries are China, India, and the United States. Happiness rankings, 84, 117, and 15. And basically, my point was, what does that all mean? It means that I can't really find a strong correlation between happiness, population, and economy. Right? Like, I can't find... It doesn't appear that the richest country is the happiest, nor is the most populated the happiest, nor are they the most miserable, right? So basically, it's just to say, I think the points you're making about, like, what's required to sustain an economy is not really addressing what I'm saying, which is that, fuck the economy. Right? What are you going to be happy? And so then I'm just kind of like, what are we going to do for the next 1,000 years? Like, what's human life's goal? So then this is when it gets real crazy. Because this person responds to me and to Mike, who said this is a crazy, what is this crap? LV Richardson. I didn't say someone would decide to have children for the reason of supporting the economy, although if someone did make that choice for that reason, it would be no different from your decision not to have children in order to not contribute to the population for whatever personal reason makes sense to you. So this person is saying, if I chose to have kids because I thought it would stimulate the economy, that is exactly the same as you choosing to not have kids because you're choosing to not stimulate the economy. Which is, to borrow a phrase, retarded. Because, no, that's not, yeah, it's the two sides of the coin, but I'm not saying I'm not having kids because I think it will hurt the economy and that's my goal. Nor do I think, again, I think everything I was just talking about was, see how this doesn't help the economy, dum-dum? I also didn't claim that populations create prosperous economies. They create economies, period. An economy that includes donut shops is one you value, apparently, so I suggested that donut eaters are important in a supply and demand kind of way if you expect to have access to donut shops for very long. But that wasn't the point of the observation. The point is, again, that the children you see in line in front of you at the donut shop have as much right to be there as you do, and the parents had as much right to bear them as your parents had to bear you. It's not your business to concern yourself with other people's children or life choice regarding them, or to rally folks around a grand plan of meaning and fulfillment for the future of the planet and mankind. The world will continue on, and we can live in it and enjoy it, or not, as we will, each to our own, now and 1,000 years from now, without a grand plan, if we'll but stop judging what is not ours to judge. So she's saying, I don't know if it's a she, I assume, is saying, well, if you'd stop judging people, maybe we could all just enjoy the world, huh? And also, why do we need a grand plan for 1,000 years from now? Which I didn't really address either because of the next comment, but I will address it now. I guess here's how I think about it. Like, think about 1,000 years before, like 1900. It's kind of like early recorded American history. Like, a lot of the history that we've found, you know, is like new. I mean, we've had to uncover a lot of older stuff, right? And it's been more recent thing to be like, hey, where were we then? What were we worried about? What were we doing? There are more artifacts like newspapers and shit where you can look and actually see what was going on. And more of this stuff was saved because people were actually beginning to archive things and say, okay, this is important. People are going to want to know, you know, 1,000 years from now, what happened? So that's 100 years ago, right? Think 1,000 years ago, the year 1000. I mean, we would kill to know what people were doing. Although, I will say this. I think that what people were doing 1,000 years ago was a lot less interesting because they were surviving, right? Like, I can't imagine that there was a lot of Game of Thrones political intrigue so much as people just trying to live, just trying to survive. You know what I mean? Getting through their lives. Like, if you want, you know, when I watch like a old time, like a Braveheart, let's say, and you're like, man, this was like just people trying to not die. And no matter what they did, they were going to die when they're like 30. And so they're just killing each other with swords over pieces of land that no one gives a shit anymore. Right. I think a lot of life 1,000 years ago is futile struggle. And I guess the way I look at it is I think about the people who may be alive 1,000 years from now and think, man, it would be fucked up if 1,000 years from now they looked back on this time and they were like, wow, we haven't really made progress. And maybe it's just my way of thinking that progress is kind of goal-oriented, like, well, what do we want to do? But I kind of feel like all these questions people are bringing up of, like, why are you alive? What are you doing here? Make me think that, like, well, I guess if we're going to not waste life, we should do something with it. Something positive would be great. But what is it? I don't know. I have no idea. I mean, I would just hope that any ancestors I had 1,000 years from now were, like, happier in general. Did a little less work. Had more fun. But here's the thing. So that wasn't a horrible thing. Again, I was just like, you keep talking about, like, there would be no donut shops if there were no babies. And I'm like, yeah, fine, fuck off. I mean, I understand that there's no such thing as an economy without that. But here's what she wrote. So Mike wrote, is this a mansplaining microeconomics lesson disguised as a troll? I gotta believe this isn't serious because it's about as paper thin as some of the egos on display here. Now here's LV Richardson. I was not trolling, Mr. Mike. I was simply reading the reviews of a lightweight nonfiction about children and dads when I ran into an overwrought philosophical dissertation containing incipient arguments for the control of populations of certain groups judged not good for the future of the planet. There was so much judgment in the piece that I decided to call it out. As a result, I got another full page of judgment buried in stats about prosperity and happiness. This from a guy who supposedly wants bloodshed over matters of beliefs to stop, but thinks nothing of speaking of babies and children as if they are not human beings with lives ahead of them to live, just as he is living his. Who is he going to be here 1,000 years from now if no one is procreating? Or is he suggesting some sort of centrally planned procreation schedule for all the humans on Earth? Or only the ones he thinks are less than worthy? I get the impression it's the last. So let's just review. In the book review I wrote, where I said, I think family bed is weird, and don't tell me where your placenta splashed down in the living room, and where I said, in a humorous way that, you know, it bothers me when I have to wait 20 people deep in line at the donut shop, and then I'm like, God damn it, why does everyone have to have all these kids? And I admitted that was selfish, and honestly, is that a big deal? In that review, this person is saying, why are you telling me that, you know, oh, is this some kind of eugenics program you're setting up? Yes. I didn't admit it on Goodreads, but I'm going to admit it here. Yes, that is my plan. My plan is to rally like-thinking individuals via Goodreads, the social network involved with books and reading, and I'd like to rally them around the idea that we should selectively breed. This is my plan to kickstart that. I'm going to use the power of my Goodreads followers, who I've hypnotized, but for the contributions of L.V. Richardson, who saw what I wrote about it and had to call me out. I like this because that language makes it sound so brave. Oh, you're so brave for calling me out for what I said. Which, by the way, was really frustrating because I was like, this is exactly what I'm talking about. You cannot question the idea of having kids without someone flipping the fuck out, right? A total stranger. And also, I like how it was like, oh, it was this philosophical, deep thing. How could I not comment on it? Well, it's pretty easy. You just fucking go past it. If you don't like it, you don't have to say anything about it. It's like such a live and let live attitude combined with I have to say something. So I can just read this back, I guess. But basically, I just said, you know, I'm going to delete your comment if you keep saying that I said things I didn't, because I never talked about a centrally planned procreation schedule or anything like that. And that's bizarre and twisted and not what I said at all. I said there will never be a day in human history when we can look at ourselves and ask, is it necessary to have children and why? And I guess that put visions in your head of me lining people up and tossing babies in a trash compactor or something. If it helps those visions, I'm about 6'4", very handsome, rock hard abs, and rich. Rich as hell. All your comment has done is to prove my statement true. And I can't ask a question in a book review without someone speculating that I'm creating a eugenics program. To ask about the necessity of a species continuing on and on forever, to question why sentient beings wouldn't wonder at the purpose that drives them, I don't think that makes me a monster, and I don't appreciate you making me out to be one in your last couple comments. I could play the same game as if I wanted to. I could say you were a monster when, in your first comment, you confessed that you once hit a man with your car and then drove off and didn't say anything. Oh, you didn't say that? Huh. I must have misinterpreted something or extrapolated. Well, them's the breaks, or them's the breaks, spelled B-R-A-K-E-S, which is what you should have said to yourself before striking someone with a vehicle. My question doesn't make me a monster, no matter how badly you're looking for one, and I'll be damned if I let you make me into a monster. I'm a monster by my own doing, thank you very much. I don't need your help. Proof? In the spirit of lightening things up, how about some jokes? Anyone know what's pink and red and silver and bumps into walls? Anyone? End. The answer is a baby with forks in its eyes. So, fuck you, L.V. Richardson. And I was really tempted because, you know, I can click on this person's profile and then just see what they're reading. Oh, God. And it's just crap. Let's see. Why Science Does Not Disprove God is the last book. 5 stars. Here we go. Does science know where life comes from or how to create it? No and no. Does science know where life comes from? Yes. Does it know how to create it? Yeah, cloning. I mean, does that not count? Do they have to create a new... can you uncreate and then create life from scratch? Does science know what consciousness is or where it comes from or where it goes after we die? Yeah, it's impulses in your brain and it goes nowhere. No and no and no. In fact, the more science dissects the intricacies of the planet and universe and the more questions science thinks it has answered, the more questions are raised as a result. Contrary to what the atheists and other secularists like to claim, science is no closer to creating life or figuring out the hard problem of consciousness than it has ever been. Evolution is not proven. The Big Bang is not proven. Where life comes from is not known. Everything that science examines or explores or creates already exists. Science is simply the study of the creation, and inventions are simply the recombination of natural building blocks that already exist. Horrible points. Basically, this is what I love. I love when people who obviously don't care for science explain science to the rest of us. And this is like what I see as the difference between religion and science, right? Science is upfront with the fact of like, yeah, we don't know everything, but here's what we do. We have ideas that we base on facts, on what we do know. And then we test those ideas out and see how they work. And what religion seems to do when it's used horribly, and when it's not used as faith, but when it's used as like the only counter to science, is basically like, well, if you haven't proved it scientifically 100%, that must be religion. And it's like, no, it doesn't have to be one or the other. Like, the thing that I like about science is that science is about, you know, living in the unknown a little bit. Like, just because we don't know something doesn't mean that it's something else. So I was super tempted to comment on that whole review, obviously, and be like, well, I saw this philosophizing, but fuck you. What else have we got? See No Evil, the true story of a ground soldier in the CIA's war on terrorism. If you think this administration or any other in the past knows what's going on in the world because it gets daily intel briefings from rafts of highly effective and disciplined informants and agents strategically placed worldwide, well, think again. This book makes it clear that the schism between Washington, D.C. and its intel community is worse today than it was even when this book was written 20 years ago. Okay? I like how they're making a lot of parallels to today when it was written 20 years ago. Our CIA personnel risk their own lives and the lives of countless others around the world, while Washington looks on and either does nothing with the info or does absolutely the wrong thing because it has no idea what it's doing, period. Statecraft and spying, games played with real lives, lives that are lost on a daily basis. I'm disappointed and discouraged to have come to the conclusion that politicians and other government key players are really clueless and operating blindly in most cases, while making life and death decisions that affect thousands, if not millions, of people around the world daily. Furthermore, the people responsible for these decisions suffer no consequences themselves. I don't think it even keeps them up at night. It's disgraceful and shameful and makes one wonder why we, the average people, keep tolerating the fecklessness of those we task with the job of keeping us safe. Trust me, they are not up to it, and in many cases seem barely interested. Good one. Okay, what a nut. I think that's most of the things. So, this is a crazy person. There's not a whole lot else of info here. This person lives in Gig Harbor, Washington, which is 1,005 miles away. I like that it does tell me how far away it is, because I'm like, oh, that's comforting, because it would take that person a long time to be in the same place as I am, because I don't want to, like, be anywhere near this fucking crazy person who could not help but resist. We got any? Oh, there's 10 reviews. Any good ones here? A neurosurgeon's journey into the afterlife. Oh, God. 9 do-it-yourself energy experiment. All the reviews are 5 stars. Oh, there's a 5-star review for our good friend Ann Coulter. Perfect. Perfect. Well, there you go. That's my views on having babies, just to review. I will be setting up a system to see who I deem worthy. And the people I deem worthy to have babies are the ones who like my reviews on Goodreads. Or possibly give a 5-star review to this podcast. Or go to lootcrate.com. Loot Crate is a service that sends you a bunch of shit. You ever go to the drugstore when you're a kid, and they would have a grab bag, and what it was $1, and it was a paper lunch sack that you could not look inside, but they assure you had a dollar's worth of shit in it. And dumb kids like me, who just, you know, I'm surprised that I didn't become a gambling addict or something, because I could have spent a dollar on 3 candy bars. That's what they had, 3 for a dollar. But you know what I did? I was like, I gotta roll the dice. I always, when I was a kid, thought maybe there'll be a lighter in here, right? I was like, maybe there'll be a lighter, and then I'll be able to set things on fire. And they won't know. They won't remember. There was not. That never happened. It was always shit. It'd be like a broken mini screwdriver and other crap like that. God, why was I talking about that? Grab bag. Just blindly looking into stuff. Let's see. Loot Crate. My Loot Crate commercial has gotten away from me. So here's what Loot Crate is. Instead of spending an amount of money on some, like, you know, an item that you actually want or need every month, they'll send you a box full of shit that you may or may not want or need. You know, it's niche stuff. Like, hey, are you into Doctor Who? Don't answer that, because your answer doesn't matter, because I'm sending you Doctor Who shit this month. You want this other weird thing that's only available from Loot Crate for the next 3 days, until everyone who's got a Loot Crate puts theirs up on eBay? Here you go. Here's a weird thing. Here's an exclusive thing to Loot Crate that's exclusive because it's Fry from Futurama, but instead of a red jacket, he's going on a black jacket. This off-model character is very exclusive and important. So, everyone who goes to Loot Crate and types in the offer code give Peter money for doing nothing will get a Loot Crate for 20% off and help support your favorite show. Oh, there was one other thing I wanted to do, but we're going to have to do it next time. I'm exhausted, you guys. I'm so tired. I can't believe you listened to this much of this. Thank you. That was a lot of just me reading out loud. Reading out loud my Goodreads controversies. Again, eugenics program, don't have babies. That's the message of the show. If this show has ever had a message, it's don't have babies. All right. Here's the David Hasselhoff Baywatch theme to take us out. I've been Pete, your ever-loving host. See you next time.
Like a ship that's tossed out on the ocean, we get caught up swimming in emotion. Hearts were sailing, love was on the right track. Got out so far that we can't get back. If I can get you in my arms tonight, we'll stay together if you hold on tight. You got to reach out, take hold of my hand. You got to reach out to your safe on dry land. You got to hold on, baby, never give up. You got to reach out when you're caught in the current of love. Keep your eye out, search for the horizon. Life's a struggle, full of compromising. There'll be storms.